You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Mighty Marvel Geeks on Sorcerer Radio, your home for all things Marvel. You just got finished listening to Rebel Force Radio, and we hope you'll stick around with us for the next hour. Today we're going to be talking about Thor the Dark World and Marvel's future plans for the cinematic universe. In the second half of the show, we'll tell you about Marvel teaming up with Netflix for the biggest group this side of the Avengers, and what's going on with Agent Carter. I'm Eric Karnes, your host, and I'm joined by Mike Emke, my faithful co-host. Mike, how are
you today?
What's
going on?
It's a good day. I saw Thor 2. It was really awesome.
So you saw it earlier this week?
Yes. I saw it on Monday.
Well, very cool.
I went and saw Thor 2, Thor the Dark World, rather. Actually no 2
in the title. Or as everyone else calls it, Loki 2.
Well, Tom Hiddleston, so far, he's not only stolen the show in Thor, he's not only stolen the show in The Avengers and Thor the Dark World, he's pretty much the biggest thing that's come out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe so far.
Yeah.
I think even bigger than Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man is Tom Hiddleston's performance as Loki. And let me tell you, in Thor the Dark World, he blows what he did in Thor in the Avengers just completely out of the water.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely believe it. And I think that his performance attributes to why Thor, as everyone says, hammered the competition this past weekend with an astonishing 84.7 million. Domestic.
Yeah, I believe the first Thor movie only did about 50 million its opening weekend. And of course it went on to do about half a billion worldwide.
Yep. So I think I finally got a chance to catch up on Iron Man 3. And from everyone that I've heard, with Thor, the Dark World, it's definitely the one that sets up Avengers 2 the best.
I don't think it has anything to do with Avengers 2, to be honest with you. I think people are still looking at Avengers 2 as if it's going to pay off, you know, that Thanos spot in Avengers 1, and they've clearly said that's not going to happen.
No.
I think, if anything, Thor 2 sets up two things. It sets up Thor 3.
Right.
And which isn't even on the slate yet. But, I mean, I would be sorely disappointed if there wasn't a Thor 3. Also, I think, you know, they're setting something big up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I don't think you can really speculate on what movie this is going to pay off in.
Well, it definitely...
At the current rate that they're going, is going to be Phase 7.
Yeah. Well, it definitely helps set up Guardians as well, you know, with the appearance of the Collector at the end. Sorry,
yes.
Spoilers.
If you stick around, there's a mid-credit scene and then there's an end-credit scene, which the end-credit scene was probably the better of the two. The director of Thor 2 had complained about the mid-credit scene, which was directed by Gunn.
Right.
From Guardians of the Galaxy. And, you know, it was filmed, I believe, during the filming of Guardians of the Galaxy, not Thor 2.
Right.
Even though Baldur and Sif are in it, it's much more about the Collector and the Infinity Gems. And it's the first time, I mean, we knew going into it that the Tesseract from Captain America and the Avengers was the Soul Gem.
Right.
Excuse me, the Space Gem It's the color of a different soul gem, the Infinity Gems. They used to call them the Soul Gems in the comics, and then they changed to Infinity Gems, and one of the Infinity Gems is the Soul Gem. It gets very confusing. I hope they don't get into that in, you know, the cinematic universe. You want to keep it clean. But, yeah, the Space Gem, one Infinity Gem, was the focus of basically the entire Phase 1 of the Marvel Universe. So this movie, we have the Aether, which, you know, from the way it's used in the movie and the coloration on it, I'm guessing is the Power Gem, but we don't have any official word on that.
Now, Marvel was saying that that mid-credit scene was just a tease on where they could possibly go with the cinematic universe.
There's so many ways to do it. You have to keep in mind there's six Infinity Gems.
Right.
And so far we've seen two. We know for sure that we've seen two.
Now, I wonder how much of the Infinity event in the Marvel comic universe might be used as fuel towards, you know, the ultimate end game. Since the signs are pointing that there's going to be an Infinity Gauntlet storyline.
Yeah, you got a glimpse of the gauntlet itself in the first Thor movie.
Right.
Which, looking back, was probably a mistake. It was one of those Easter eggs for the fans. And then, you know, as they moved forward, decided we're going to, you know, set this up with the Tesseract being one of the Infinity Gems. What was on the gauntlet? There were six gems on it. But right. What were they?
Well, at this point in time, if they do anything with the third Avengers film, it's not going to be till 2018. So we're talking 5 years out.
I don't even know that you're going to see Thanos in that, in the way that you're expecting. People were expecting Thanos to be the villain for Avengers 2.
Some people were expecting
Thanos as the villain in Guardians of the Galaxy, which he still kind of is. From everything we've heard, Thanos is the one calling the shots, but I don't
see him having the presence in Guardians, except maybe end credit scene.
Well, if you look at the Avengers, Thanos was the one behind that as well.
Right.
For as much as, you know, Loki was the main villain, and it seemed to be Loki who had all the agency. Loki was directing things the way, you know, the Chitauri invasion of Earth. But he was being manipulated by Thanos.
Right.
And it seems like the Collector and I believe Ronan the Accuser is working for Thanos in the Guardians of the Galaxy film.
Yes.
An interesting spin.
I think so.
Because Ronan, being a Kree, was sort of a villain and sort of not a villain in the Fantastic Four. From the Fantastic Four's perspective, he was a villain. But from, you know, his own perspective, you know, he was following Kree Imperial law. He was keeping order in the galaxy.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, just why he's working with Thanos in this.
Right. Well, I think the interesting thing out of the mid-credit scene with the Collector is, you know, when Siv and Volstagg bring the Infinity Gem, the Collector's response is one down, five to go.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder, okay, how are they going to tie it? Definitely makes you wonder, how are they going to tie in the Collector grabbing the other five gems? I mean,
if he's going to be the one who grabs them, and why he's after them is still up in the air. You know,
I think it'd be a mistake to put a Guardians scene into Captain America, even in the end credits. I think it'd be stupid there.
Well, it doesn't fit with the theme of Captain America. Captain America 2 looks more like a James Bond film. It's an internal
S.H.I.E.L.D.
political struggle.
Yeah.
Set against, you know, the return of Bucky Barnes, who we thought was dead.
Right.
Clearly he is not.
Right.
I don't think Captain America 2 is going to have anything to do with the Infinity Gauntlet storyline that's sort of going on. They, you know, Marvel can walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. Not every movie needs to tie into the larger meta plot.
Right.
You know, the Iron Man films don't tie into the larger plot at all, really. Even, you know, Iron Man 3 mentions the Battle of New York. There's no, you know, there's no Infinity Gems. They took it in a direction where it's a small sort of Tony Stark story.
Right.
Now, Thor 2 does, you know, Captain America, Avengers, and Thor 2 are the ones that tie into the meta plot.
Well, there's an early rumor out there that the storyline for Guardians is that the Guardians are in possession of what would be gem number 2.
3.
Well, that number 2 that the Collector would get his hands on.
Okay. Yeah, the Tesseract is in Asgard.
Right.
And the Collector has the Aether. The Collector might be after his second power gem, Infinity Gem. The third one that we would see, it would be interesting to know which one that would be, because Adam Warlock has the Soul Gem in the comics.
Right.
And traditionally Drax the Destroyer had the Power Gem. But like I said, I'm almost positive that that's the one that Malekith was after in Thor 2.
Right.
Because, you know, it's red and it acts like the Power Gem. It's just, so, I mean, I don't know, maybe Peter Quill has a power gem, has a soul gem.
Well, there's now hope that there will be a Thor 3 in the phase 3, plan, in the phase 3 plans. In which case it is going to, that movie will directly lead into Avengers 3. With everyone speculating Thanos storming into Asgard to steal both the Gauntlet and the Tesseract, which would be the final gem he needs by that point.
It could be. I think that time frame is a little quick. There's still 4 gems that we haven't seen.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think Ant-Man is going to have an Infinity Gem.
No.
But really the only thing that we know. We know they're making a Doctor Strange movie. Now, Doctor Strange could have an Infinity Gem. Tie into the larger meta-narrative.
What's the possibility that with Avengers 2, a gem could come out of that, you know, since they're bringing in Ultron?
Ultron never had anything to do with the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right, but, you know, they've already said that the cinematic universe isn't necessarily...
Yeah, I mean,
they're
we know
taking
that.
Liberties.
Ultron could come into possession of the Soul Gem, or the Soul Gem could be what creates Ultron, ultimately.
Could be.
That's about the only way I can see it going. Now, if we see Guardians of the Galaxy, and the gem that they're dealing with in that is the Soul Gem, I mean, I don't see... You know, if they were going to use the time gem, it would be Kang the Conqueror and not Ultron.
Right.
If they were going to use the mind gem, well, the mind gem could work in the same way that the soul gem could work. You know, possibly provide the spark for this artificial intelligence to become sentient.
Right. Well, remember, we've got 5 years to have Thanos collect the other 5 gems.
We don't know that the Collector is working for Thanos.
True.
The Collector could be working against Thanos.
Could be as well.
That was the Collector's original, you know, in the comics, the Collector was working against Thanos.
Okay.
He was another one, like Ronan the Accuser. He appeared to be a villain because he was, you know, fighting for
right.
the Infinity Gems. He would collect Marvel superheroes. But, you know, in his mind, he was trying to protect the universe from the destruction that Thanos was trying to bring to it. And, you know, he could be working against the Guardians of the Galaxy and still be working against Thanos.
Right. Well, to add more speculation to this whole Infinity Gauntlet theory, you know, as you said, you know, if the rumored Doctor Strange movie is one of the Phase 3 films.
I think that's all but confirmed.
I think even Stan Lee confirmed a lot of it. And, of course, Stan Lee also pretty much confirmed Black Panther as well. it could be the possibility of a Guardian sequel in Phase 3, which...
That is going to depend a lot on how Guardians of the Galaxy does at the box office. I can't see them having committed to a second Guardians of the Galaxy picture at this point, even if it does tie into the larger narrative.
I don't think they have yet either, but you know, the speculation is there could potentially be a Guardian sequel in which they could de-thaw Adam Warlock, who's rumored to be in suspended animation in Guardians. And then this could really lay the groundwork for the Infinity Gauntlet Avengers 3 in 2018.
Yeah, I think if you see Adam Warlock in the Guardians of the Galaxy, that's going to be your location for the Soul Gem.
Right.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that that's the gem that they could potentially be fighting over if these rumors are true with the Collector.
Well, nothing says either that it has to be Guardians to a Guardians film to do it, because I've heard rumor of a Captain Marvel movie, and doesn't she have some tie-ins with Guardians?
Not in the well, not Carol Danvers. The previous Captain Marvel, Phyla Vell, was one of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay. So maybe if they did the whole, like, Green Lantern type thing where she comes to Earth, transfers it over to Carol, maybe at the same time she could let her know about the whole Adam Warlock thing, and then...
Yeah, I do not see that happening. If anything, they will put aspects of the previous Captain Marvels, Marvel, Genis Vell, Phyla Vell into Carol Danvers for the movie. Because I really think if they do a Captain Marvel movie, as much as I personally loved Phyla Vell, I think they're going to do Carol Danvers.
Yeah. Well, again, we're still talking 5 years, 4 or 5 years before something like this could be happening. So that's about where we stand there. I think this might be a good time for us to take a break.
All right, let's take a break, and we will catch you in the second half of the show.
Hey, don't forget to send me a postcard from the Muppet Studios.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I can't do that, Walter.
But, Gary...
Because... You're coming with us!
Book your next Disney vacation with Kristen Hetzel of Magical Journeys Travel, an unconventional agency for the unconventional client. Magical Journeys is dedicated to finding the best pricing for your next magical journey.
Wait a minute. I love that idea.
Kristen will work hard to save you money and give you the quality of service you deserve. As a well-established agency and an authorized Disney vacation planner, Magical Journeys Travel has many years in the travel industry and dealing with the infamous Disney reservation system. Let Kristen help you plan your next magical journey. To book travel or for a free quote, please contact Kristen Hetzel at www.magicaljourneystravel.com/Kristen. Follow her on Twitter at Kristen Hetzel.
Hey, come on, everybody.
Magical Journeys, an authorized Disney vacation planner.
Your attention, please.
Sorcerer Radio is a fan-run, award-winning internet radio station that has been entertaining Disney fans for over a decade.
We have dedicated this happy place to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America.
With many weeks' worth of Disney park music, attraction audio, live shows every weekday, as well as our podcasts, you'll easily be transported to your favorite vacation destination anytime while at home, work, or on the go.
Remain seated, please.
permanecer sentados, por favor.
Download our free apps for iOS, Android devices. Plan and book your next trip to the Disney parks. Interact with the Disney fan community and get the latest news stories at srsounds.com.
Broadcasting the magic every day.
Who are you, if I might ask?
Sorcerer Radio, srsounds.com.
Welcome to the new sound of Sorcerer Radio. Version 3.0.
Sorcerer Radio presents the Sorcerer Radio app, version 3.0.
We have the technology.
Check out our brand new Sorcerer Radio app for all iDevices as well as Android devices.
Better, stronger, faster.
Streaming Disney music 24/7. App highlights include a new broadcast window that shows you what you're listening to and what's coming up next.
Hot dog!
Multitasking so you can listen to SR as well as perform other tasks on your iPhone.
Gorge!
Listener access to all of our daily shows. The new interface, a new buffered stream, auto reconnect when signal is lost, visual EQ, pause, rewind, and scrub features.
My goodness!
And the new SR info area. Get your virtual Disney World fix today with the new Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0 from Sorcerer Radio.
Be careful with that. It's extremely dangerous.
SRSounds.com.
Welcome back to the Mighty Marvel Geeks on Sorcerer Radio, your home for all things Marvel. You just heard a theme from the 1970s live-action Amazing Spider-Man show, which was probably the best part about that show. It certainly was not the costume design.
It's definitely, they got that 70s funk feel to it. Now, with that bass line and everything else, flashbacks.
Yeah, show was terrible. I think I've mentioned before on this show, the Japanese Spider-Man show that eventually laid the groundwork for the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was way better.
Yeah, but you know, being a 7-year-old kid and watching it, it was fun to watch at the time. Now, for the 70s, it wasn't bad, but you look at it today, oh, yeah.
Hey. Well, Mike, he was barely Spider-Man in it.
True.
It was closer to WKRP in Cincinnati than it was to the Incredible Hulk.
But you know, again, with me being 7, it didn't matter to me. I was watching Spider-Man on TV. And it was stuff we talked about and tried to emulate on the playground the next day. So.
That's a good point.
So yeah, but I mean, it's sort of like watching, okay, I'm going to bring it up from DC World. Shazam from Saturday mornings.
Shazam Isis Power Hour.
Watching that then, it was like, cool. When I saw it many, many, many years later on Nick at Night when they did a fan pick and he picked 2 episodes of Shazam, I'm like, really? This is what I watched? It's not the same. And it's like, okay, difference between being a kid and being an adult. I got disappointed real quick watching the replay as an adult.
Like, yeah. Well,
I can't believe,
Mike,
I wasted time on it.
Speaking of superhero television shows.
Uh-huh.
There are 5 coming to Netflix.
Now wait, we kind of speculated on this. I don't remember if it was here or if it was on Weeby Geeks.
Well, you know, wherever it was, we were dead wrong.
So we're not getting Captain, you know, the group of Captain America as a miniseries?
Hmm. No, what we're getting is Alias.
Okay.
Power Man.
Okay.
Iron Fist. And the big one that just came back to Marvel, Daredevil. And that's going to lead into The Defenders.
Wow. See, I really wasn't that much of a Defenders fan.
No one was a Defenders fan, dude. It was Beast and Iceman and Angel and Doctor Strange. This is going to be very different from the comic book Defenders.
Wow. Well, I still think we were onto something with, you know, with that miniseries being Coulson and Cap reminiscing, you know, swapping stories.
That could be something you see at some point, but.
Hey, if that's the case, we want our residuals. Cause you heard it from us first.
Well, let's talk about what Marvel and Netflix are going to do. They're going to have 4 13 episode series and 1 5 episode Defenders miniseries. And, you know, from the sounds of it, the Defenders could almost be, you know, a movie in 5 acts.
Right.
And, you know, in true Netflix fashion, unlike what Amazon Prime does, you're going to be able to watch all 60 episodes in one sitting if you so choose.
Well, you think, I don't know if they're going to be able to, you think they're going to really film all 13 or all 60 episodes at the same time?
They're going to put them all on. They're going to put them on the service at the same time.
You don't think they're going to do the 13 Daredevils, release it, then 13?
I mean, you know, I'm just locations. Going by what Netflix has said, that they'll all be available to binge watch at the same time.
Wow, that's a major undertaking.
Well, if you think about it, there's 4 distinct separate shows that are probably going to have their own writers and directors, you know, their own cast and film at the same time.
Right. You don't think there's going to be any crossover?
Not until The Defenders. I think they're going to have their own set stories. You know, it's going to be, you know, Daredevil's going to be about Daredevil. Jessica Jones isn't going to be in it. Luke Cage isn't going to be in it. Danny Rand's not going to be in it. It's going to be Matt Murdock, Foggy Nelson. You know, there could be some minor characters who cross over. There could be villains that cross between the shows. But, you know, those guys, you know, would be on call on the set.
Right.
They're not going to be there every day. They're not going to be in every episode.
Well, no, I'm not saying every episode, but I would think near the end, there's going to have to be, you know, maybe starting around episode 10 in each series, there's going to have to be some crossover. Or Defenders isn't going to make sense.
Well, you know, they don't have to film them in order, Mike.
True.
TV shows very commonly film out of order. So if you're going to have 3-4 episodes of each that cross over, you know, you're going to film them first with Daredevil. You're going to film them in the middle with Alias and Iron Man, Iron Fist, and, you know, film them at the end for Power Man, or, you know, or not. They could do it however. And like I said, it's not going to be the characters themselves. It's going to be the supporting characters, possibly villains. And, you know, having 1 or 2 guys on call, they're probably going to film around the same place, probably, you know, in different studios on the same lot.
Right.
So, you know, it's not going to be a difficult undertaking to lay the seeds. I mean, if you look at the way the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done it, you know, true, they didn't film at the same time, but Guardians and Thor were filming around the same time.
Yeah, one was wrapping as one was starting.
Yeah.
And with the end
credits, they could very easily, well, yeah, that came from the Guardians filming and not the...
Right. I mean, they could have just said, we need these 2 characters, you know, hire you on for a quick cameo rate and record it so it could be thrown back into the movie.
So yeah, they probably could have been they probably paid Balder and Sif a day rate for that.
Yeah, and that could have happened after Thor wrapped.
Yeah. But no, it's, I don't think it presents any sort of challenge at all to film them all simultaneously. Like I said, they're probably going to film in different studios in the same lot with different production crews, just like it's four completely different shows, and then, you know, film the Defenders afterwards. And right. They're going to release them all at the same time.
Well, it's going to be fun to see how this goes, especially with Daredevil. I'm curious to see how they're going to pull that out after everyone was so harsh on the Daredevil movie.
Well, have good writers.
Well, now that it's back under Disney and Marvel control, maybe that will be the case.
I don't think that bad films leave as bad a taste in people's mouth as Hollywood executives would have you think. You know, people think that the Green Lantern property is forever tarnished because Green Lantern movie wasn't very good, right?
Well,
that's the best example I can give you because all the Marvel movies have pretty much been gold so far. But, you know, if you look at, and I've said this before, Star Trek, the motion picture, that movie was terrible from beginning to end. There was nothing good or redeeming about that. They followed it up with Wrath of Khan, which is to this day the best Star Trek movie. Just because, you know, the first two Daredevil and Elektra were bad movies, and they were bad movies.
Oh, Elektra was horrible.
You know, as long as these TV shows are good, people are going to watch them. And with Netflix, you don't need people to turn up for the pilot episodes the way you do with a TV series. You don't need 7-10 million people to not watch whatever they were going to watch on, you know, ABC or CBS or NBC to tune in for this. Netflix doesn't look at, you know, daily first week numbers. They look at annual numbers.
Right.
So, you know, it's how many people are going to watch this within a year of when it goes online. And that number is probably going to be huge. And that's the beauty of a deal with Netflix is you have time to build an audience through nothing more than word of mouth. I mean, you know, there is a huge press buzz about this. But if people say, Daredevil, I don't know, I saw that movie, it wasn't very good. You know, they're going to have a friend at the office. They're going to have a friend from high school who's going to say, no, man, you got to see this. It's really good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean quality speaks for quality, and that's the bottom line. And so far, the Marvel Cinematic Universe team has done quality. I think it's interesting that the characters they picked, you know, there was a buzz about Dwayne Johnson playing Luke Cage in a movie, and, you know, Kevin Feige said they picked these characters because they had no intention of doing movies with them through, like, 2023.
Right. Well, what's... You know, coming from their press release, pretty much their press release, this TV deal, follows the landmark movie distribution deal, which beginning with 2016, the Netflix is getting the movies as well. Or did
Netflix
I misread
already it? Has the movies.
Okay.
Watch all the Marvel movies on Netflix right now. And I have several times, in fact. So. Well, except for Iron Man 3. But all the Phase 1 movies are already on Netflix.
Okay.
They might have worked out a broader deal with Disney about other Disney properties.
Yeah, that's what
but
it was.
The Marvel movies are on Netflix already.
Yeah, the one article I saw discussing this said this new original TV deal follows last year's landmark movie distribution deal through which, beginning with 2016 theatrical release films, Netflix will be the exclusive U.S. subscription television service for first-run live-action and animated movies from the Walt Disney Studios, including titles from Disney, Walt Disney Animation, Pixar Animation, Marvel Studios, Disney Nature, and Lucasfilm.
Lucasfilm is the big one.
Yeah.
That, and it's not just Star Wars that you can't get digitally. You can't watch Star Wars streaming anywhere. You can't buy it on iTunes. It's also, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Correct.
You can't, you can buy Raiders of the Lost Ark as a four movie, you know, excuse me, you can buy Raiders as part of, you know, a four movie Indiana Jones package on iTunes for $36. But you know, it's not on Netflix, it's not on Hulu, you know, it's nowhere to watch streaming.
Well, starting in 2016, Netflix will have the exclusive.
Well, there you go. Digital distribution really needs more films.
Right.
I mean, you know, Netflix has been great with TV shows, not just these new Marvel shows, but, you know, stuff like Arrested Development, Orange is the New Black, but the movies have been lacking across the board for digital. And, you know, it's great to see at least they're going to have, you know, a firm base of Disney films, which Disney has a huge library now.
Right.
Yeah, especially since they've acquired Marvel and Lucas. But, you know, you go back to 1933 with Disney for the animated features. You've got stuff like Bedknobs and Broomsticks. That's a great base for Netflix to build, you know, a relationship with this company and sort of build itself out as the premier place to go to watch things on the web.
Right. Now, what does this mean for Agent Carter then?
Well,
I was
actually just about to say that. Marvel is working on a second television show with ABC in addition to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
And you know,
that's going to be the Agent Carter series.
That's the early speculation. Because, you know, Agent Carter has everything going for it, even the things that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't. It was, you know, if you watched the Agent Carter one-shot, it was on the Iron Man 3 Blu-ray, that would make a great television show. It really, it's like The Avengers. And when I say it's like The Avengers, I don't mean Marvel's Avengers. I mean Steed and Peele from the 60s.
Okay.
It's got a great period piece feel to it. And it's also got a lot of action and espionage, which I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been missing so far.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you really have to, if you want this show to be successful, you have to look at shows like The Avengers, Man from U.N.C.L.E., you have to look at the James Bond movies, all the stuff that inspired Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the 60s when Jim Steranko and Steve Ditko were doing it.
I Spy, Mission Impossible.
Yes, all that stuff. That, you know, that should be what you're basing your show on if you're doing a show about S.H.I.E.L.D., which, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., clearly about S.H.I.E.L.D. The Peggy Carter show would also be about S.H.I.E.L.D. It would be sort of an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. period piece. As I like to say, it's, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. meets The Avengers meets Downton Abbey.
Right.
Because it's the same time period as Downton Abbey. They could have a crossover, and that would be amazing. Like, if Peggy Carter goes to England and has to stay with, like, the Dowager Countess as she investigates strange happenings in the British countryside.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't see that one happening.
I don't either, but that would be the greatest crossover in the history of crossovers. That's what the word crossover was invented for. And it would really liven up Downton Abbey's disappointing fourth season, too.
I have not seen Downton Abbey, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, it's not really what this show is about, but no. Yeah, the fourth season so far has been disappointing.
Now, you said you saw Thor. Fill us in a bit more on Thor. It.
Well, Thor the Dark World was probably the best Marvel movie so far. I mean, I think it blew the Iron Man movies out of the water. All the individual character movies, this was the best one, and it probably blew the Avengers out of the water as well.
Okay.
I mean, it starts off with big action. I think we also saw that trailer where Thor fights the giant.
Yeah.
That was right at the beginning of the movie.
Well, that's disappointing to hear.
That's how it starts, dude. The action just ramps up from there. The one thing that stood out to me as a comic book fan, it got into a real Jack Kirby groove. They mix the Asgardian, Norse mythology with science fiction action sequences that were incredible. I mean, you had spaceships flying through Asgard being chased by these Asgardian turrets and defense ships. There were dog fights, dude. There were dog fights in Thor 2. And then, on top of all that, it did the thing that Thor did so well, was be a romantic comedy on top of being a superhero film. And I mean, that was really the vibe that the first Thor movie had, that, this is a superhero film. We've got the shield presence. Thor's going to fight the big villain at the end. There's the fraternal conflict between him and Loki. But at the core, it's still the story of Thor and Jane Foster and, them falling in love with each other. Okay. And, I mean, that's really the heart and soul of the movie, is the relationship between Thor and Jane. And the action is great. Probably the weakest point is the villain, the evil Doctor Who, Malekith the Dark Elf, who's played brilliantly by Christopher Eccleston. Like I said, former Ninth Doctor.
Right.
But a lot of his scenes that gave him the sort of gravity and the background and the pathos got left on the cutting room floor when they went to reshoot more film, more scenes with Tom Hiddleston as Loki. Now, whether that turned out to be a good idea or not, the stuff between Loki and Thor, the fraternal conflict, the brotherly love that they have for each other, despite, the conflict between them, is a really great story. And, it's really important to the story that you get as much of that as possible. And Tom Hiddleston is probably by far the best actor in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, too. So that doesn't hurt.
Right.
So, I mean, the problem that creates is that the Eccleston character, Malekith, feels almost directionless. It's sort of like he's doing this because the movie needs conflict. More than just the conflict between Thor and Loki, they need a villain, so they have Malekith the Dark Elf. Like I said, originally there was a lot more pathos for him that sort of got left out of the final cut of the movie. But I think what they have is very strong character piece. And everyone in this movie gets to kick ass. At least a little bit. Rene Russo gets to kick some ass. Anthony Hopkins gets to kick some serious ass. Jane Foster gets to kick some ass in a way that doesn't feel tacked on or, that betrays her character. She gets to use her mind and her intelligence to kick Dark Elf ass. And that is really cool to see.
Very cool.
And Mike, I think that's all the time we have for our show this week.
It is.
It's always sad when things come to a close, but we will be back with you next week and every week at 8 p.m. Saturday.
8 p.m. on Saturdays.
8 p.m.
Right
on Saturdays.
Right after Rebel Force Radio.
Yes. It's a great show and a great lead-in for us. We're really grateful to everyone for having us on the station, which you can find at srsounds.com. It's your home, Disney music, Disney news. If you like Disney, listen to Sorcerer Radio. If you like us, you can listen to Weeby Geeks at weebygeekspc.com. You can find this show and that show on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter at NecroFamicom. Mike, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at either at Marvel Geeks or at Weeby Geeks. And you can also find both of these shows on Stitcher as well.
We're on Stitcher now.
Yes.
Well, I'll have to make a note of that. If you want to get in contact with us, if, you know, Twitter is not good enough for you, if our website's not good enough for you, you can voicemail. You can leave us a voicemail at 321-216-8227. Or you can email us at weebegeekspc@gmail.com.
You know, quick correction on the phone number is 321-219-8227.
That's what I said.
You said 216.
Oh. Maybe I have dyscalculia. I have 9 written down.
No big deal.
Yeah, if you call the voicemail and you call the wrong number because I read it wrong, you know, leave us an email. weebegeekspc@gmail.com. Mike, I think that's our show for this week. It was great having you, as every week. And we will see you all next week.
And until next time.
This has been a BB Geeks production.